What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
25 years ago, Sister Helen Prejean wrote Dead Man Walking, which was later turned into a film starring Sean Penn and Susan Sarandon. It's currently an opera production at San Francisco Opera. Sister Helen and other advocates are seizing the time and renewed dialogue about her writing to urge Governor Gavin Newsom to commute the sentences for the 500-plus people left on California's death row. Sister Helen Prejean joins us now. Sister Helen is a Catholic nun, author of Dead Man Walking, one of the nation's leading voices against the death penalty. This week marks, as I mentioned, the 25th anniversary of the opera adaptation of her book. She's working with the Anti-Death Penalty Coalition to urge Newsom to grant clemency to everyone sentenced to death in California. Good morning, Sister Helen. There you go.
Here I am. You got my southern accent.
Wonderful. I do. Yes, ma'am. Sister Helen, in addition to the religious reasons that you oppose the death penalty, can you talk about the ones that are rooted in social justice, right? Like, who's more likely to be sentenced and executed when we're talking about the death penalty?
Boy, Kat, the patterns really become clear. The way the Supreme Court in the Gregg decision in 76 set up the death penalty, they did the way they structured it. First, it's an impossible criteria to decide who should die, who deserves to die. Get this. They said that ordinary humans on juries, on supposed to be able to distinguish what's an ordinary murder and the worst of the worst. It's only supposed to be for the worst of the worst. And we don't know what the Sam Hill that is. It's individuals go, well, my mother was killed, but was it during a felony? And all these legal things get in there. So first of all, you have an impossible criteria. And then they put huge discretionary power into the hands of prosecutors. You never have a death sentence unless a prosecutor seeks it. And that's their individual decision. And also then of executive officers like governors, like presidents. Trump, before he left office last time in the last 6 months, had 13 people killed at whim. He decided it. Let's kill these. And they went out and they killed them. So we got an impossible situation, even in the way this the whole thing is set up, supposedly according to the Constitution. Now the patterns become clear. Most of the nation, in law or in practice, is not executing people. But in the deep South, former slave states, that's where the pockets of execution, that's where prosecutors still get political points for being tough on crime. And that's where it's happening, including in my state, Louisiana. The promising hope of California is that you have, and there's been a series of moves by Governor Newsom and the people of California. I've been in and out of California over these last 35 years, many, many times. And generally, the people of California awaken to these social issues quicker and are ready to act. And I believe, I'm hoping that Governor Newsom is going to go all the way because he's already shut down the killing chamber. He's done a really big thing, Kat, in just getting condemned prisoners off of these death row situations and putting them into a regular prison. I know a woman I'm accompanying under a sentence of death in California, and the day came when they walked out of death row, their section, where they always had to be accompanied by two guards, where they were strip searched every time they'd go from one section of the prison to the other. In handcuffs, and walked to a gate, walked into a women's regular prison, and immediately could go to classes, could be in a dorm with other women with their own shower, and they didn't have to go way down the hall, strip search before they went, after they came back. It's made a huge human difference. This particular woman says, I'm taking classes. Man, I'm getting into life skills or why I got addicted. And she's learning and she's growing. So if he goes one step further, he's already, these decisions already indicate that he accepts and sees the dignity of human life, and that even people who have committed terrible crimes are worth more than those acts and can gross humans. Why not go all the way and just go ahead and formalize it and commute all the sentences to life? And it'll be a beacon on the hill for this country.
Well, Sister Helen, you are very convincing, and I'm someone don't need to be convinced, right? I'm an abolitionist, and I said free them all. I have questions for you, though, because, you know, political, you've been in the game longer than me, you know, political conditions change, right? The way a state or a city looks. I live in Oakland, with birthplace of the Black Panther Party. My city council, say for one person, I was completely moderate to conservative, and it happened in one election.
Yeah.
In 2020, as I was talking to my first guest, Grandma Addie, my organization and statewide coalition were able to get Gavin Newsom to sign a bill that made it harder for cops to say, I feared for my life, right? So for his first term, and he commuted, or he, paused the death penalty. He did a lot of things in his first term where we were like, all right, well, maybe we can work with this dude. This term, he has threatened to withhold money from cities if they don't sweep homeless encampments. He has a right wing, well, some of us are labeling it a right wing podcast where he attacks trans people. And he's entered into this bizarre back and forth with Trump. Like, I can't with either of them. So, and I'll just point out that the last election that we had, there was something on the California ballot that would make slavery illegal in this state, and it failed.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, but it failed. Like, people voted, California voted against it. So I guess I just don't know if the Gavin Newsom that paused death row executions is the same Gavin Newsom that you're reaching out to in the series of actions and press conferences that you're having this week. I'm trying to find the question in there. What's the shift in strategy, or where do you think? Because we think he's preparing for a 2028 run.
Yeah.
Which means he is going to be tough on crime, because that's, yeah, you know, those are the words that ring for America, even though it hasn't worked in however many years we've been doing that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, here's the long road, the long haul of what I work for, and you do too. And it's to keep educating the people. We have to just keep. And Thurgood Marshall gave us our marching orders a long time ago when he said, Americans say they support the death penalty, and referenda are hard because there's not a lot of deep reflection and education. People go, yeah, I want to keep slavery, or yeah. It's knee-jerk, surface soul stuff that gets reflected. But deep, as you well know, deep education of the people. And our latest move that we're going to be doing nationally is that Dead Man Walking is now going to be in graphic form, and we're getting it out to young people all over this country. It's a magnificent piece of work that has been done by an artist in Sweden, Catherine Anyango, and a writer, Rose Vines. And education, education, education. So that's what we got to do. Now, what Gavin Newsom's going to do with now all the pressures, if you're running for president, be tough on crime, I don't know. But here's the one thing I do know, and it is the path eventually to justice, and it's the bending of the arc of the universe, to keep educating the people. And you know what I found out, Kat? Mm. I mean, crisscrossing this nation and talking to all is if you can bring the people close, and you do that through story, not through quoting statistics, mm-hmm, or the miracle of story. And that's why this opera is such a miracle. It's 25 years old now. It's been around the world. It's the most performed modern opera, and it takes people on the whole journey because they have live drama, and they got music constructing their hearts, starting off with they see in the prologue, this guy kill in cold blood young people, and he's not remorseful, and at the beginning everybody hates him and wants to see him get what he deserves, and then it takes him through the whole journey and his conversations with me and his coming to recognize what he's done, and it ends with the execution. It's the only opera with a minute and a half of silence. It's the only way people through the arts can really get close, because they never see an execution. They're done in secret. Even though it's going on in Alabama, Texas, Florida, you never get close. So people like me who've been the witnesses We know we got to be out there talking to the people and bringing them close. And they have good hearts. For the most part, people get it when we bring them close. So that's my job, your job too. But to have the arts like this, to have a full opera, I mean, you can hear a pin drop in there when the execution happens. And then people, because it brought, and they know that he did the crime, no question about did he do it or not. They know he did it. They hate him. And they want to see him get it. And then you also meet him as a person and see his personal journey. And then you watch him die. It's really quite something. I mean, the performance opens on the 14th of September. And so I hope a lot of people will attend it.
I'm going. If I can get tickets, it's already, they sell it and fast. So
look, I'll be, would you come as my guest?
Yes, ma'am.
Be in touch with me right after this. You got my phone number, huh?
Yeah, my producer shared this. Yes, no, ma'am. We sure
you
do.
Come, Kat. You come.
All right. Yeah, I'll definitely be there. Sister, before we let you, and thank you, before we let you go, well, first of all, I need a copy of that book, and you're going to have to come back and do a whole interview about it.
Yeah, we'll
do
graphic
that. Novel.
We'll
My
do
listeners
that.
Love graphic novels.
Yeah,
so
that's
something
right.
They'll really be interested in.
And this is it. Yeah.
There it is. Yeah.
October 23rd, it comes out. You can already pre-order it on Amazon. But we go into universities. We're getting donors. So, like, I'm going to Notre Dame University. We're going to launch it at Fordham. I'll be coming to California, too, and I want to get it in at Berkeley and different places.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.